Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Moments of Fleeting Genius. Manton, I am busy right now running Android apps on my Mac. I finally have access to a huge repository of quality software for my Mac.
This is what you've been waiting for. Your Mac just wasn't useful enough without being able to run these things, right?
That's right. I can finally, I have to be honest, I only tried one thing and now I can't remember what it was. But
Angry Birds? No?
No. The thing is, so what I'm talking about, of course, is this thing called BlueStacks. BlueStacks.com offers a kind of, I don't know if it's a simulator per se, but it lets you download and run Android apps on a Mac or a PC. And I was pretty intrigued to try it because I've actually never really, you know, had an Android device to play around with. And I thought, oh, this is cool. I was pretty skeptical, actually. I thought, this isn't going to work. This is going to be like, like running Wine, PC mm-hmm. emulator where you like try it and it's like, oh yeah, I can run Load Runner from 1989, but anything new doesn't work. But I have to admit, I was able to run this app, and then next thing I know, I'm looking at a virtual Android screen, kind of like you'd see the iOS simulator on the Mac, but it's got this specialized interface that lets me search all these Android stores, and I connected up to Android Marketplace, I guess. I was able to use my Google credentials to log in. And then I was shopping for software. And it worked. Hmm. I was impressed, actually. I'm opening it up again here just to remind me eventually what I actually tried to install. Oh, I know what I tried to install. I tried to install some crossword app. That's it. Yeah, I install, because you know I have Black Ink and I make crossword software when I'm not busy hunting down Mars Edit features and bugs. So I installed this free open source crossword app for Android, and it worked. It was kind of cool, but I'm not sure. I was at first. I was like, "Oh, this is insane! This is amazing! How could they possibly have done this? And why isn't there one of these for iOS, because obviously, you know, we have the iOS simulator, but we can't run the actual apps from the store in that. Right.
And we can't distribute apps to other people. Like, I mean, you can zip up your simulator files and send it to a few trusted people, really, but you can't really distribute these and have other people run them.
Yeah, so I thought at first, wow, this is a real achievement. And then I was actually chatting with Mike Ash about it, and he's like, well, it helps that Android is open source, you know, so I don't know how much that plays into it, but you know, that's a good point, actually. It got me thinking, like, this is kind of weak right now because it's just this interface to run, you know, apps that should be used on a touch device on your Mac. But it sort of got me thinking, like, you know, if somebody really liked, you know how like some of those people that made iOS apps first ended up making like Mac compatibility libraries, like the mm-hmm. TWUI and Chameleon. Right. Mm-hmm. It struck me that if you happen to really like developing for Android, maybe you would like having an easy way to write Mac apps with Android.
So does this company, you know, I downloaded this briefly. I haven't really messed with it much. Does this company also provide some kind of framework or some kind of SDK where you can distribute Android apps to Mac users without them installing this sort of BlueStacks runtime app?
I didn't look into it closely enough. That's an interesting question. Looking on the side, it says OEMs preload us. Maybe that's one of their angles. Maybe they're thinking, hey, you can make any device, you know, Android compatible. Their aim seems to be mainly tapping into the huge, you know, relatively huge collection of Android software out there. Mm-hmm. You know, they have like a meta search that will search like four different app stores for Android. But that does make me curious. Like, if I have to imagine there are people out there who are just totally jazzed about Android development, right? And then they might be thinking, huh, if there's a technology that would let me run, you know, build like I do for Android, but then also sell to PC and Mac users.
Right. That's such a weird world, though, to have an app that's Android, Mac, Windows, but not iOS, you know, without rewriting it in Objective-C, in which case, I don't know, maybe there's a better way to port it to the Mac. But I don't know, that's just it's an odd environment to have, and I'm not sure what that means.
Right, and I wonder, is it technologically daunting to, say, for this company, BlueStacks, to make this also run on iOS, or is it just a policy issue with, you know, the App Store not allowing downloaded interpreted apps?
Right. Yeah.
But like, could this technology be licensed to, like I said, somebody who was just interested in running their Android stuff on an iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
Could they just bundle the whole library with their submission to Apple?
Yeah, I could see that being pretty compelling.
Yeah.
And for some people, I mean, not me, but someone who knows and loves Java already, they like Android devices, but they want to distribute their app to more people. I could definitely see that being popular.
Right. And it also just kind of got me thinking, like, you know, there's this Google makes the Chromebook, which is basically just a really cheap laptop that runs, right, runs a web browser, runs Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So Google's current investment in software is web-based software and Android Java-based software, right? I think most people think of mobile as the future, but if Google were interested in more native desktop software, wouldn't it make sense for them to support some kind of Android specifically geared for the desktop? Like, what if Google releases their own SDK saying,
right,
hey, you can now develop native apps for the Chromebook?
The telling part of that would be, does Google already have an internal tool where they are able to do this, some of this kind of stuff? And as far as I know, they don't. I mean, they've released a bunch of iOS native apps recently that I think are just their native iOS Objective-C apps. They use WebViews extensively, of course, because the web and HTML and CSS and JavaScript, that's what Google does well. But as far as I can tell, like, the new Gmail, the new Maps are native iOS apps. But if they did use some kind of compatibility, you know, Android-like SDK, that could then be, you know, published and, you know, convinced other developers to use, that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, it strikes me that like, ask a random Google developer what they program in.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer will depend very, very heavily on which department they're in, which,
right,
level of the infrastructure of Google they work in. You know, there's some huge departments of that are heavy into Python, I think. You know, until recently, the creator of Python, Guido Van Rossum, was working there. But everybody who works on Android has got to be just completely steeped in Java stuff.
Right.
You got everybody working on their web apps, like Gmail. I don't know how that stuff's developed. Do you? It's got to all come down to, like, JavaScript in the end. I don't know if they have some special technologies, you know, making it so they write it in Java and then it boils down to JavaScript. I think I've heard of stuff like that from Google.
That does sound familiar with the very early versions of Gmail. They had some kind of framework that made that stuff easier for them.
But then,
in fact, they released it, I think.
Right. I think that's what I'm thinking of. But that just all sort of begs the question, like, compare that to Apple, where, you know, maybe apart from the people who build the very minimal web apps, like, you know, from iCloud, Apple.com, the vast majority of people at Apple are working in Objective-C.
Right.
And, you know, then again, there are some low-level stuff like in pure C or C++, but it just feels like that's kind of a competitive advantage for Apple, because it's kind of like when, you know, we moaned about it when the iPhone came out and everything was like full bore at Apple into developing iOS stuff. And what happened when Apple was so heavily focused on iOS is they apparently like poached their own internal development teams from the Mac and had everybody working on iOS stuff. That was only possible because Apple made the decision to, you know, use Objective-C and use almost, you know, all the same base libraries for the iPhone as they use for the Mac.
Yeah, there's something to be said for just everyone using the same thing. It's simple, it's predictable. You can become an expert in it and still move between teams.
Right.
It reminds me a little bit about, I've been playing a little bit with Node.js, which is the server-side JavaScript that's, I think, based on Chrome's JavaScript engine, although it could be anything, I guess. And that's kind of the same argument, right? It's like you've got to know JavaScript really well to do client-side, you know, web browser interactive stuff, job, you know, Ajax stuff. Why not use the same language on the server as well?
Right.
And so it's, you know, brand new framework designed for building web apps. And yeah, I don't know, there's something to be said for that. Use the same language everywhere, regardless of what type of interface or app you're using.
Well, anyway, I don't know if we'll see Google try to sort of standardize on Android or standardize on Java. Maybe they already have, like we said, maybe there's this Java to JavaScript tool. We'll have to look into that. I guess it just depends. Does Google really think the web can do everything else, you know, except for mobile native apps? Or will they be lured back into the appeal of, you know, native apps on a laptop that you can type with?
It's funny that Google, they want their hands in everything, and so it's almost like they're not willing to make decisions between one technology and the other. Because what if they had to scale back somehow and they had to choose between Android and the Java platform and Chromebooks and, you know, the web JavaScript platform? You know, what would they choose? Which way would they go? They never seem willing to do that. They do this, they do this, they also do iOS apps. I don't know. It seems like a lot to manage and different platforms to juggle and be experts in, but I don't know, they seem to be comfortable with it.
Right. And I guess I can see the strategic value of Apple being like totally centered on Objective-C, but I guess if for some types of employees, I'm sure they get a thrill out of the kind of constant ability to shift things up. Like if you work at Google and you get tired of working on Python, right, you can go work in a Java-based group or, right, you know, work on JavaScript. And I wouldn't be surprised. I would be curious to know, like, is there a language of any, you know, popularity at all that you couldn't find a way to work on at Google? Like, is there a team that just does, like, maybe the finance group is still just like doing everything in COBOL? I don't know. Yeah. There's gotta be like a few Haskell jobs. Right. There's gotta be like even like Prolog.
Not only jobs, they probably have their own like internal user group where those people hang out.
They have Google, the Gaskell, right? They have their own fork of Haskell. Yeah, they there's the team that runs the lunchroom recipe management software, and they're using Modula 2 just because that's kind of cool. But I don't know, maybe some Google, maybe we have any Googlers out there who can tell us their most surprising language they've seen in use within the company. I want to know. We need to start a collection.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, so this week, thanks again to Crashlytics for sponsoring the podcast. Crashlytics is a crash reporting solution for iOS. They've got a framework. They've got a nice setup where it walks you through adding the SDK to your app, make a couple calls, and then when your app crashes on iPads and iPhones everywhere. They'll all be aggregated together on the Crashlytics website. You can sort them. You can kind of mark them as I've already done this before. And you can just kind of get a sense of what devices are crashing, what operating system versions are crashing, what versions of your app are crashing. It's all in one place. So great solution. And I just integrated this into another app. I was helping an old client update an app, and I added this framework. So I went through this whole process again, and works great. I'm really happy with it still.
That's awesome. I don't think Crashlytics is available for Mac yet, but I had a reminder with my Mac stuff about why something like Crashlytics would be useful to me, because, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy. I'm a good developer. I made my own crash reporter for my Mac app, and it submits to my website and submits a crash report to Fogbugs for me by emailing to Fogbugs. And this is all well and good, but then lo and behold, I ran into one of these situations that crops up every once in a while where my my domain gets like listed on some, not blacklist per se, but it's some spam house thing where then suddenly like Dreamhost stops respecting my email. So anyway, long story short is for this like whole class of non-critical mail coming from my server, I say non-critical because, you know, it's quote unquote just crash reports, but I lost like 2 weeks of crash reports because they were being mailed out, but then ignored by Dreamhost, who was handling my inbox for that. So anyway, that's just sort of reminded me that this is one of those things where even if you've got your own solution, if you've got your own hand-rolled thing in iOS, it might be worth looking at Crashlytics just to have something that's like reliable and not only going to get like all the awesome UI stuff on the web, but you will have the confidence of knowing that obviously they're good at handling this because it's their business. My business is making software, not so much like the crash reporting infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So I think for my iOS apps, I will definitely be looking at Crashlytics when I get them ready to ship.
Cool. Well, thanks again to Crashlytics for sponsoring the podcast. And everyone can learn more at Crashlytics.com. Okay, Daniel. Well, I had posted to app.net a couple weeks ago saying, basically, I need a better way to manage everything. I was having one of those days where I'm coding, I'm trying to manage other projects, I'm juggling three or four different things and realizing I'm falling further and further behind and not just able to keep track of everything as well as I could. And the reason is because I don't really have a formal tracking task system anymore. A long time ago, I tried a few things and I settled on Task Paper because I loved the sort of free form. It's all just text files and you can just kind of manage to-do lists and things you need to get done. And then after a while, I kind of stopped using that and I just focused on having a bug system for projects so I can track bugs and feature requests. But everything else, it's a flagged email in mail.app or it's just in the back of my head that I know I need to work on this. And after a few years of this, it's not scaling anymore. So I am in search of a better way to do things. Do you have a better way to do things?
I am always in search of a better way to do things, but it's funny you ask because I have been recently submerging, all of the above myself.
Drowning.
I've recently been re-drowning myself in OmniFocus. At a higher level, I've been getting back into getting things done, you know, the system of repute, and it's sort of inspired by my complete like productivity bankruptcy, so to speak, of just like feeling like, oh, nothing is working for me anymore. Mm-hmm. But also it was well timed because Merlin Mann, who has in the past famously blogged on like 43 folders about getting things done, is now the past several episodes of the Back to Work podcast has been going over the getting things done methodologies. So it's been like one of those things where I listen to Back to Work while I'm running, and I think, oh yeah, when I get back to my office, I'm going to totally reorganize my system. But it's one of those things. Back to the getting things done system, like, requires you to kind of like do this big process of like really recording everything and then organizing it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done that yet, but I'm sort of like easing my way back in. I got OmniFocus back up and trying to get in the habit. I think a lot of it is, like you said, you have this thing in the back of your head. Some of those things are just in the back of your head, right? And there's sort of like a muscle to getting those things that are like on your mental to-do list, getting them somewhere trusted. And I'll catch myself. I'll be like, wait a minute, I'm holding something in my head that could be recorded. I had this like weird example where there's this guy in Santa Cruz where I'm from that I only know through Twitter and like online, and I have a long-standing loose commitment to meeting up with him sometime when I'm in Santa Cruz. So that's like a mental kind of cruft in there that's, I'm not likely to actually remember it when I'm in Santa Cruz, but then every time like I run into him on Twitter, I think, oh yeah, I was supposed to maybe try to meet up with him. So even that's an example where even that kind of thing now I'm putting into OmniFocus. It's like, I have this like section in OmniFocus that's like a context for next time I'm in Santa Cruz.
Huh. So you don't feel like that's just too much, like you're spending more time managing contexts and things than, you know, because that's the trap, right? It's like you're spending all your time getting things done in the app and not actually getting things done.
Right. Well, one of the sort of promises of getting things done, the methodology, is that when you get the stuff out of your head, that's the only time you can really kind of have the clarity to then pursue mm-hmm. the getting the things actually done.
Right. You can clear your head of the stuff and focus on what you're actually working on.
Right. So it may in fact be overkill to put stuff like that in there. I'm not sure yet, but it feels good to get it out of my head. And then I know it's like having that knowledge that you don't have to worry about it anymore. But another big part of getting things done is sort of having one system. And this is a conflict for me because, as you know, I use FogBugs for all of my email management, customer support email and bug tracking. And in the past, I have been occasionally tempted to just start putting all my personal to-dos in there.
Right.
And just be like, oh, okay, email support at redsweater.com to remember to fix the bathroom sink. You know, it's like, that is one way of keeping myself accountable. But I think that's an example where you just have to accept that, okay, maybe it's okay to have a couple different systems.
Yeah, having one single system is really appealing. And right now I have too many. And right now I'm using FogBugs for all my indie products. And the folks I work with at VitalSource, currently we're using Asana, which is this like task management, project management web app that's really slick. And we're also using it for tracking bugs and features, which may not be the best choice. But so already I've got two bug systems, and then I've got a separate system for how I'm dealing with email. And now I need a separate system for sort of higher level tasks. And so that is annoying. It's having one system sounds quite a bit better.
Well, I'm still feeling it out how to, because I'm putting everything into OmniFocus, but then I also have this sense that, oh, it's getting too daunting. Like the list is too big and it's too cluttery and all this mm-hmm. stuff. But I think the key is with a digital system where you're using an app like OmniFocus or Things or even Task Paper, the gist of it is that you can use that digital nature to really smartly hide stuff from you when it's not appropriate. So like I said, I have this context in OmniFocus for Santa Cruz now. I could use the software then to say, oh, like next time I'm in Santa Cruz, if I want to, I could say, OmniFocus only show me stuff that says do this in Santa Cruz. And then every single thing, I could have thousands of to-dos in my system. They're all going to be hidden from me. You know, similarly, I can have my context saying email, my email context, like when can I read and write emails? And then if I just have OmniFocus focus in on that, I think that's the key, is having a system where you can safely record everything and be able to sort of limit yourself to not seeing everything when appropriate. And then finally, also having some system for making sure things don't get lost in the system, right? Like having some, I think in getting things done, they have a review requirement where you have to kind of go through and remind yourself what all your stuff is. But
I started trying Things again. I hadn't really tried it since 1.0. And since then, you know, they've got an iPhone version, iPad version. They've got a new Cloud Sync that apparently works really well. So I'm going through like the 14-day trial of that, seeing how it works. And then I'll move on to OmniFocus and then I'll maybe try some other stuff too. But the way I'm using it is similar to what you're talking about, a lot more lightweight, but just having tags for different sort of categories of things where I can filter, only show me this project or only this kind of work. Have you played with Trello from Fog Creek? When I posted to app.net saying, I'm drowning in too many projects and not enough task management software, a few people recommended that. And I like the idea a lot, but more than the idea and the UI that they've come up with, I like the idea that maybe, I don't know if this is on their radar, but maybe it could be integrated into Fogbox, right? It's the same company, but right now it's a completely separate app. And if they had some kind of integration between those, it seems like that would, I don't know, that would make me feel better about using it, knowing it would stick around and knowing that it was not a completely separate world of data.
Yeah, I haven't had a good deep look at it. I remember I took a quick look at it. I sort of implicitly trust Fog Creek, so it was alluring to me in that regard. On the other hand, the reason I'm using OmniFocus is because I also trust Omni. So it's
absolutely
one of those things where it's like, oh, this makes the decision easier. I agree with you. It would be nice if it integrates with Fogbugs, or if it did. However, I think because I sort of took that stance where I said, okay, this is my bug tracking system over here, and this is my getting things done system over here, and like I gave in to having two systems. It's not that interesting to me to have them combined, and also perhaps I don't want to invest too much more in the Fogbugs based stuff. It is a little complicated. I mean, I have like a folder in my OmniFocus that's all business related stuff. So I have all Red Sweater stuff in there. I even have core intuition stuff in there.
Do you have things in OmniFocus like fix bug number 200? Like, is it that level, or is it just like work on a certain feature or work on 2.0?
Yeah, it's only things that I sort of feel like I'm not gonna come back to in a timely manner unless they were in OmniFocus. So I don't have like fix bug number 200, but I might put it in there if there was like some reason that I wanted to keep it high on my attention. I might say like, you know, finally get around to fixing bug 200 if I'm like trying to talk myself into it. But more likely, it's just stuff like, I can't even remember. I guess I could go look at it, but just stuff that happens to be work related. Maybe it's like update Jenkins. It's not like a defect in my software or anything like that. It's just something I want to do for the business that doesn't really make as much sense as a bug report to myself per se. Sometimes I do write bugs like this to myself, where I say like investigate such and such open source library. But I think that kind of stuff now, where I used to write myself a bug in Fogbugs, is more likely to go into OmniFocus. Because I do stuff like that where it's not like a defect or even a feature request. It's just, you know, like check out the Chameleon open source framework, not because I want to port to iOS style programming, but because it just sort of feels like something that's part of my professional roster. I don't know. Yeah. I also added a new OmniFocus sort of category for just in general software I want to try. So funnily enough, I could put Trello in there. I could put other getting things done options in there.
This is getting a little recursive. I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, and you know, I hear what you alluded to about the risk and the possibility of like getting too kind of persnickety about the actual tracking and not doing enough of the actual doing. But at least right now for me, the breakthrough was freeing myself up to actually start doing the recording of things I want to do. I had a block there for a while where it's like, well, I can't write down the list of things I want to do because I might not organize it right. And that's like,
yeah.
What kind of BS is that? Right. And one of the nice things about it being in something like, OmniFocus is you could always reorganize it. You know, I could always go in and say, take every single task in OmniFocus and move it to a new list called unorganized. And then I'd be starting from scratch with my organization, but I would still have the captured list of things that at least at one point in time I thought were important to do.
Yep. Probably also my fear of over planning and over organizing will probably prevent me from even getting close to that. So it's probably not really a concern. I'm glad OmniFocus is working for you. I mean, the nice thing about going with that app is it probably has more features and is more powerful than what I need, so I won't outgrow it. And like you said, we trust those people 100%. Omni is a great team working on this stuff.
And that was one of the angles. It was actually kind of daunting to me. It was I spent a long time thinking, well, OmniFocus looks great, but I don't need something that complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that it's necessarily complicated, but it does have a lot of features that I may not use. And just sort of like getting to the point where I said, you know what, I can afford to not use these features. It's all right. I can still get something out of the app. And then what really makes it work, or seems like it will make it work for me, is, of course, it's great that they have the iPhone app, and it syncs up so well that, you know, you really can have this like blind faith that when you're on the go, you add something to OmniFocus on the phone, it's going to show up when you get home on your Mac, and vice versa. So it's also, you know, got the Siri. It uses a clever Siri trick. Do you know about this?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it, but I haven't tried it.
It turns out that like any app can examine the reminders database on iOS. And even modify it. You know, I guess there's like a reminders framework. So what Omni does is they say, you know, by default, just your basic reminders list, they have an option where it will just automatically import anything from that list and turn it into OmniFocus to-dos. And then it removes it from the iPhone reminders list. So if I'm on the go and I say, Siri, you know, remind me next Tuesday to, you know, meet up with Manton, then the next time I open OmniFocus on the phone, it's automatically imported into OmniFocus.
Slick. That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a clever thing. And I thought, after seeing OmniFocus do that, I thought, oh man, a lot of other apps could do this. So for instance, like I occasionally try to lose weight with this Lose It app, right? And I think it would be cool if I could say, Siri, add baked potato to my food list, right? And then next time I run Lose It, it could say automatically import everything from the reminders list called food or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Siri integration being sort of hacked for a variety of things like this. It doesn't work for everything because it's kind of hard to turn it into something that's easily importable. But, you know, for example, like Instapaper, it wouldn't work for me to say, add http://,
right,
you know, manton.org/blog/, you know, to my reading list.
Yeah.
But something for people to think about, I think, is can you take advantage of users setting up a custom reminders list that acts as Siri's interface to your app?
Now, you can't delete things from the reminder list, right? So it's, you know, like once it's sucked into OmniFocus, it's still in the system reminders. Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it's deleted. So that's genius. Yeah,
that is genius. So for Instapaper, I mean, taking that example and making it actually maybe possible, you could maybe do something like, you know, Siri, remind me to read the latest blog post on on Manton.org or something. I don't know.
Right. But then it would, then it would be a challenge for Instapaper to turn that into something meaningful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, nothing else is coming to mind at the moment, but you can imagine other apps that, well, for example, you could say, all these little note apps could support something like this, right? Like maybe they do. I don't know. But like you use something like SimpleNote, don't you?
And yep. Extensively. Yep.
What if you could say, Siri, add my grandma's phone number is 623-5555 to my SimpleNote list. I don't know. That's something to think about for anything that has natural language built into the app and sort of has like a, or for example, like, there's a variety of Fogbugs clients out there for iOS. What if I could say, Siri, add, you know, when I click on the close button of a window, it doesn't close to my Fogbugs list.
Yeah.
And then every time I open the Fogbugs app, it creates a new bug for everything in that list.
That would be cool, but I don't know. The way Siri works sometimes, the flakiness, what you just said is a really long task. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how well this would actually work, but that would be cool if you, I mean, it's something, you know, we don't have a Siri SDK, so just being able to hook in with these little hacks is something.
Yeah. I guess the other solution is like custom email, right? Like you could have, Siri send an email to watermark.com or whatever.
Yeah. Omni has an email to OmniFocus Sync gateway now, right? Where you can send an email to a special address and it adds it to your task list.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't played with that. Yeah, they just seem to have everything. I mean, that's one of the things that keeps me intrigued. And then the fact that it's so keyed around getting things done, which I'm already sort of sold on, made it like easy for me to go with it. And then they've got a new 2.0 they're teasing right now. So
cool.
2.0 for the Mac, which is like, hey, people still making Mac software, you know.
Great. Well, we'll continue to play with stuff. It sounds like you have a pretty good system. I may have a good system at some point in the future, but still working on it.
Yeah, we'll see if my I ever actually get any of this stuff done. Then we'll know if it's a good system or not. I have a good and growing list of things that I would like to do. You know, there's this categorization of your to-dos in getting things done, and one of them is called the someday maybe list. You know, where you're supposed to record things that are like, they may nag at you because you do want to do them someday, but they're sort of just like not something that needs to be on your daily, you know, like, so like go to France someday would be on your someday maybe list. And sometimes I worry that I have unfortunately, implicitly put everything on my someday maybe list.
Yeah.
So, you know, fix critical bug someday maybe, file taxes someday maybe.
Well, that's similar to like putting too many feature requests into a database. I used to, anytime I heard a request from a user or anytime I had an idea, I would put it in the system, and that's fine for a little while, but like 5 years later, you can't make sense of anything. There's just too much, and half of them made sense 5 years ago and no longer make any sense at all. And that's one thing I kind of learned from 37 Signals. They had a good post at one point saying, we don't put feature requests in our database. If it's important, we'll hear it every day from customers.
Right.
And we'll know we need to do it. And, you know, if you say something like that, people are like, you're crazy. You should log everything. But it actually, there's something to that. And I've been following that mostly for a while. Just, I put things that I know I want to do in the system, but I don't put every little thing. If I hear a request from a user that I really don't think makes sense, or I don't know how to do it, or it just doesn't seem like a good fit, I'll reply and tell the user I'll think about it, but, you know, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Or, you know, I'll try to be honest. Like, this isn't something that's on the radar right now. I won't file it. But if I hear it again and again, then I will know that it's more important than I thought. And then it needs to go into the system and be worked on.
Yeah, I think that's there's something compelling about that. The sort of like resistance I have is I don't record every feature request, but sometimes I catch myself having a feature idea and then neglecting to record it, and then realizing 2 years later when I have it again that actually that would have been a really good idea, and you sort of like lean too much on the idea that. Let's put it this way. You can't lean too much on the idea that every great feature idea is going to be requested all the time.
That's true. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think if I have a great idea for a feature, I'm more likely to put it in because I'm worried I will forget about it. So if I'm out away from my computer, I'm not coding, and my mind's clear for 5 minutes, and I come up with, I've got it. This is the best way to do it. I will usually log those. Because there was a special environment, like I'm out walking the dog or I don't know, do something else that allowed me to think of this feature. maybe I shouldn't be coming up with features 24 hours a day, but there was a special circumstance that allowed me to come up with the idea. So I do worry that if I don't log it, I won't remember it and it'll be lost. So for those, I agree. You don't. Some feature ideas will not keep coming back over and over.
Right. It's like a distinction between a feature idea and like a product insight. Like the ones you really want to record are like, aha, this is something that would actually change the nature of the product, maybe in an important way. And like sometimes you have those, like you said, like when you're walking the dog or having a shower or whatever, and it's like, I got to remember this thing and get it in there. It's kind of like if you're a songwriter or something and you come up with like this perfect verse, you can't count on that coming back, that moment of inspiration coming back. And it's like, it's painful to know, like you have these things, these moments of fleeting genius and then you might not remember it. It's actually, Manton, you said something about 3 minutes ago that I thought would be a perfect show title. And now this show is going to have some lame title because I don't remember what it was.
That's okay. I remember some of your good lines.
Manton, this is 2013. This episode's going live. It's great to be starting another new year with the Core Intuition. And I'm so excited about all of the success we've had with our new sponsorship approach this year. It looks like we're still going to be going strong coming into the new year. Our listenership has been going up as far as I can tell, and seems like people are satisfied with the new format. So I look forward to kicking off the new year with you, and we'll keep this weekly show going.
Great. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.